Hello, welcome to Sport and the Fields in association with Aldi UK, official supermarket partner of Team GB. I'm Jonathan Overend, and if you're dipping in and out of the series, just catching the odd episode here and there, well, you're more than welcome. But make sure you subscribe to get the whole series. We've had the likes of Claire Balding, Catherine Merry, Karen Pickering, Sir Matt Pinsent. It's front row stories from people who were there. So we're focusing in this first series on the Olympic Games, a new guest, a new episode for each day of scheduled competition at Tokyo 2020. And in terms of current Team GB members, we heard from Tom Bosworth earlier in the series, the GB race walker. While on the pod today, another medal prospect, in fact someone, as you'll hear, who'll be devastated if he doesn't get a gold medal. He's got quite a story. He's Letelo Mohamed, who's with us, along with Marcus Buckland, whose two Olympic Games came 16 years apart. He worked at Atlanta and in London as well. How are you, Marcus?
Jonathan, I'm very well, and I am looking forward to this chat because, as you have tantalizingly teased just then, this guy has quite a story, which is by no means finished. It's had a wobbly moment in it. The best is hopefully still to come, but it's a terrific tale, which I'm sure he is going to tell very well.
Yes, wobbly moments, high pressure moments, devastating moments, thrilling moments. Yeah, he's had a lot in his career so far. We'll bring him in just a second. It got us thinking about the various themes we've been touching on over the course of this series, because as I'm sure you've noticed, so many themes come up pretty much in every episode, whether it be pressure, emotion, inspiration. You've also got redemption coming through in this episode. And the idea of the nail-biting finish, Marcus. Well, this guy definitely was involved in one in Rio. There have been so many over Olympic history and in sport in general. What comes straight to your mind when we talk about nail-biters in sport?
Well, the moment you mentioned those to me, I just jotted down a few different sports. First of all, I go back to 1981, the Ashes series, Botham's Ashes, the Headingley Test match in particular, remains, I think, the most riveting 3 or 4 days of live sport that I have watched uninterrupted. 2005 was almost as good, but I just bought into Bob Willis and Ian Botham back in 81 in particular. And the World Snooker Final of 85, the Black Ball Final, went on forever, didn't it? Yeah. Dennis Taylor, Steve, they might still be playing that final frame.
Early hours of the morning, but it still got like 16 million or something like that, didn't it?
It got an astonishing audience. And then also in the 80s, 89, now, everyone knows, who knows me, I'm a big Spurs fan, but Liverpool played Arsenal, last game of the season, if you remember, and Arsenal had to win by 2 clear goals. They were still only one up with a minute to go when Michael Thomas famously scored the goal that gave George Graham's team the title in, you know, the last seconds, yes, of an astonishing season. So that still jumps out. A bit more recently, Johnny Wilkinson, the dropkick to win, yeah, England the World Cup in 2003, and Manchester United scoring, was it twice in the last minute and a half or so to win the Champions League against Bayern Munich in 99. There are so many like that, and they do stand out forevermore.
I was talking to Karen Pickering in one of the earlier episodes about this astonishing race we saw at the 2008 Beijing Games, when Phelps was going for his 7th gold medal, and he pipped the Serbian Kavic on the line, just touching by 1/100th of a second. And still to this day, there are those who don't believe he touched the wall first. But that was certainly one of the most thrilling races that I've ever seen. Just looking back through the Olympic history books as well, I was reminded of the 1992 Barcelona 100 metres final. And it was only when I saw the times again that I was reminded of what a brilliant race that was. Gail Devers won the gold, 10.82 seconds. Merlin Otte, Marcus, finished 0.06 seconds behind Devers, which kind of suggests she won silver, doesn't it?
Yes.
She was fifth.
What?
Fifth. 0.06 of a second behind the gold medalist. It was an incredible race. And, you know, Olympic history is littered with those sort of close finishes. And in all those other finishes you mentioned, there's a winner, but there's also a loser, Marcus, and that is the pull of sport, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's what does it to us.
And the different ways it's taken. Here's one of my favourite stories, a horrendous story, but the 1956 Grand National, which I think everybody, even if they don't remember it, they know the name Devon Locke, owned by the Queen Mother, ridden by Dick Francis, who, of course, went on to become a prolific writer, 40 yards from the finishing line, five lengths clear, going to win the Grand National, and then has a phantom jump in the air for no apparent reason, falls flat on its stomach and doesn't win. And the best quote of all about that was from the Queen Mother afterwards, who simply said, "Oh, that's racing." And I thought, okay, that's one way to deal with an astonishing sporting moment.
And it's what makes this episode so fascinating, because it's how, as the loser on that particular occasion, you turn yourself in your mind into a winner. And that's not easy.
Not at all. As you've rightly said, that the margin between success and failure, particularly at the Olympics, is so slight. And it's not just the race, it's the 4 years of planning that has gone into this moment. And to have it snatched away, if that is the case, I mean, I don't know how I would deal with that. And certainly the way that our hero in this episode does deal with it, I think, okay, he didn't actually win the fight, but I think he won through as a human, as a sportsman on that particular occasion.
Part of that was down to probably the most emotional interview that's ever been broadcast by a British Olympian, wouldn't you say? I mean, even more so than Steve Redgrave's famous "Shoot me now if you ever see me in a boat again" from Atlanta. When you see someone basically breaking down on camera, it's tough. Yeah, I mean, from our side of the ropes, it makes for good TV. But, this was a big moment.
It was. And I also think it can do you the power of good. I've, like you, covered Andy Murray a lot. And I think for a lot of people, until that day at Wimbledon, when he burst into tears, having come so close again to a Grand Slam title, until that moment, people admired him, but didn't necessarily warm to him. And since then, that's changed, and he's broken down a few times. Tiger, I'll never forget Tiger Woods. Of course, we talk about redemption, and the way he came back to win the Masters last year was astonishing. But 2006 at the Open, just after his father had passed away, and when he closed out that particular tournament, he fell into the arms of his caddy, and he couldn't hold back the tears. You can't help but be moved. Although equally, the one other sporting moment I'd like to bring up with you is back in 1974. I keep moving away from the Olympics, so I apologise. But Dennis Law...
That's right. You keep going back in time
I
as
do.
Well.
I do. I'm an old man.
You're dating yourself.
I'm an old man. No, I don't actually remember this at the time. I've seen it subsequently. But in 1974, Dennis Law, who'd scored 237 goals for Manchester United, was playing against them for Manchester City and scored one of the goals that day that relegated United. And he did not show a flicker of emotion. There was no celebration, but goodness knows what was going on inside him as he tried to compress the horror he must have felt on one level for sending down the team that obviously stole his heart. But he had to remember that on that particular afternoon, he was playing for their arch rivals.
Absolutely. So again, we come back to this idea of it's what sport does to us, and it's why we love it, isn't it? It's the emotional pull of sport. Sport, as I said right at the start of this series, if you didn't catch it on episode one, sport these days is so much about data and statistics, isn't it? And it's a vital part, yeah, we see that. But sport's deeper than that. It means so much more than that. And you're going to hear quite a moving interview, I think, over the next 20 minutes or so, which perfectly encapsulates what we're talking about. Let's bring him in then. Bronze medalist from London 2012, silver medalist from Rio 2016 in the Taekwondo is Latelo Mohamed.
Oh, my pleasure.
So Latelo, you're joining us from the training camp in Croatia, right? You sure you're going to be able to come back all right?
Well,
you've got this all organised.
Yeah, well, you know what? Gary is the main organizer, so we all put our faith in him, and I'm sure that he's going to get us back nice and safe and sound. If not, then well, God help us all.
Is he walking around like a minor celebrity? Because you know he was on the pod a couple of episodes ago.
Yes, I saw it. Well, I should say I heard it, and he's his chest is out, and he's not been bench pressing, so I'm guessing that's the effect of being a celebrity.
It was a good episode, Marcus, wasn't it? You enjoyed that one.
It was a fantastic episode. Gary is a natural storyteller. I love the day you went to UK Sport with your huge, great presentation, hoping to get £12 million. And we're offered 2,000, and I guess there was no coming together in the middle after that, was there?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a difference in price. I couldn't quite believe that story when I heard it, but it just goes to show how far we've come as a team. We're really as a nation for this sport, as we know, Taekwondo is not an English sport; it's a Korean sport. But to be involved in what's been a miracle of a journey from nothing to a gold medal winning team. It's been nothing but a pleasure for me.
I've got to ask you one quick question which may be a stupid one. Yes, you said it, and I'd heard it before. You, Lutelo, say Taekwondo. Everybody else says Taekwondo. Can you please explain the discrepancy?
Well, listen, here's what I always say. None of us on this call are Korean. So you say Taekwondo, I say Taekwondo, you say potato, I say potato, whatever, whichever way you want to look at it. I'll be honest, I'm actually not even sure which one is right. All I know is that I'm really damn good at it.
you're an Olympic medalist and you're not sure what your sport's called.
Hey man, listen, I just care about being on that podium, man. The Taekwondo debate is the least of my worries.
And you get the whole player-fighter thing as well. You know, no one seems to know whether you're a player or a fighter.
I will say I do prefer fighter. I do prefer fighter. I mean, at the end of the day, it's martial arts, it's combat sports, it's full contact. It's not like karate or some of those other lesser sports where...
Steady.
I'm joking. No, I'm joking. I've got really good friends in karate. But the fact that we're a full contact sport and you can get knocked out and that wouldn't be a disqualification for me... That makes you a fighter, absolutely.
I always liked the idea of the Taekwondo-er. Taekwondo-er.
Well, he can certainly do it.
Taekwondo or you can Taekwondo-don't. And I know which category I belong in, that's for sure.
But of course, Lutelo and Jonathan, no one's been able to do anything for a while because of lockdown. How difficult has that been for you, and how depressing in some regards has it been for you?
You know what? I think with this affecting the entire world, I came to the thought that it would be crazy of me to moan and complain that I'm not able to compete when there's obviously far more serious things going on in the world. And as much as we love what we do, much as we love sport and we want to go out there and perform for the public, for ourselves, you know, I think sport can is allowed to take a back step, and while we hopefully sort this whole situation out. During the lockdown, I was able to go home, back to London, spend some time with my parents. My dad is actually the one that taught me how to do Taekwondo from the age of 3 years old, so there was no escaping the training when I was back in London. I think he loved having me back home, and it was a really good time to me for going back to the foundations, but going back to the basics. Really practicing all those things that my dad used to teach me when I was a little boy. So just really, really hope that next year the Olympics happens on time and we can all make it happen, because I do think that if the Olympics happens on schedule, being in 2021, it has the potential to be perhaps the best Olympics ever, or certainly one of the most memorable Olympics in recent memory. With everything that's going on in the world, this Olympic can almost be like a beacon of hope. I don't think that's an exaggeration. It could be just such a wonderful festival where the world will stand still and, you know, watch their athletes. So, you know, we're training hard, we're focused, and just really, really praying and hoping that things happen in Tokyo next year.
I love that idea, the beacon of hope.
I see that
as the strap line. They should add that to the logo. Yeah.
Absolutely, and if they want to send a check my way, I'm happy to give you my bank account details at the end of this call.
Want to explore that idea of the extra year in just a second, but I've got to ask you about your dad. As you say, he introduced you to the sport. I bet he absolutely loved having you back, didn't he? He was probably saying, right, lad, enough of that Manchester nonsense. We're back doing it the Walthamstow way, right?
Man, you must have set up bugs in my house, or because that's pretty much exactly what it was. you know, I was just really blessed in this life to have great parents. They're always so supportive, always so motivating to me. And it's just such a positive environment. So being able to go home and, like you said, train with my dad, go back to those basics and do some of the work, which made me an attractive feature and reason why GB Taekwondo wanted to pick me up. So my dad's really one of the best coaches ever in my mind. And to go back and just do those one-on-one sessions with him, which is amazing.
Can I just ask you, because we've spoken about the importance of parents and also PE teachers, you know, different athletes are inspired by different people, but more often than not, it is a parent or it is a PE teacher, more than just sitting on a sofa and suddenly being inspired by somebody winning a gold medal. You started being coached by him, I think, at the age of 3.
Absolutely.
Was it a constant process? Was there a period when you guys fell out, or when you fell out with the sport? How did it develop from such a tender age, Lou Taylor?
I have 2 brothers. So I'm 1 older, 1 younger. So I was in the middle. And what would tend to happen is that they would try and gang up on me. So I had to learn to fight real, real quick. Otherwise, I didn't fancy going to bed with bruises. I mean, it's all, you know, obviously apart from my mother, it's all boys in the household. So it's fair to say it's a very boisterous household. And we're very much a martial arts family. Everyone in my family is a black belt, by the way, including my mom. Yes, we are, truly are a Taekwondo family. You know, UFC nights, boxing nights. We love combat sports in this family. We love sports in general, but we always had a close affinity with combat sports. And growing up, that's just all I remember. And because eventually my dad got a gym in 1997. It's still there in Stoke Newington. And I would remember training in the classes and wondering why some of the other children couldn't get the techniques as well as I could. It was just like, oh, God. So I think I just always loved it. And it just seemed to come to me. And out of all of my brothers, I was the one that really wanted to take it further. And I never would have been here if I didn't have the parents I had. I'm so blessed to have really, really great supportive parents.
So here we are in this Olympic cycle, this extended Olympic cycle thing. And the thing that I don't really get, not being an athlete, is how have you made it work in terms of, you know, you back time things, don't you? You back time your Olympic cycle, your major event cycle from the date, from the exact date, probably from the time of your gold medal match, you know, on that specific date. Yeah, so just talk us through what has changed in terms of your training and the whole Lotelo operation with a view to Tokyo.
Well, we're seeing it like an extra year's extension. We're still in the same cycle, but we're seeing it as an extra year. And if you speak to myself, if you speak to Bianca, if you speak to Jade, I think you'd probably hear a similar thing. We'd have seen it, okay, it is what it is. It's completely outside of our control, but it's an extra year to get better. And just the thought of being able to put on a show at the height of our powers next year, like I said, what could be, I think, such, well, which is already a historic Olympics if it happens. And it's just such a thrill. So,
I mean, I'm guessing you don't consider yourself at your peak yet, right? So
no.
An extra year is just going to make you better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I really don't feel like I've allowed the world to see 100% of me. So I'm really, really excited. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling healthy. And I really can't wait for next year. In case you couldn't tell, I think I've said it about 10 times already.
It's coming. It's coming through.
This is Sport on the Fields, in association with Aldi UK, official supermarket partner of Team GB. I'm Jonathan Overend, alongside Marcus Buckland, and we're in conversation with British heavyweight taekwondoer Lotelo Mohamed. This is Lotelo's hotel in Croatia. They're on a GB training camp right now.
Yes.
As we retrace his story, we fast forward through London 2012, when he brilliantly won a bronze medal. 4 years later, he headed to Rio de Janeiro determined to win gold.
Yeah.
And for 5 minutes and 59 seconds of a 6-minute gold medal match, that's exactly what he was doing.
Oh, man.
He was fighting brilliantly. He was in front. He led 6-4.
Yes.
He was within 1 second of the prized gold medal.
Yeah, absolutely.
He ended up winning silver.
Absolutely. In the most brutal of fashions you could imagine. I mean, to be dominating and winning an Olympic gold medal match, to be in a position where you, it's like seeing a mirage of your life, all the training, all the words of motivations from your parents, all of the hard work, all of the pain of experiencing the loss and defeat of actually losing that at the Olympics, at the home Olympics. So using that as fuel and fire, all of that just kind of there in one big kind of sphere, and just almost being able to grab it, then boom, snatched away at the last second. And I'll go back a few more. Just, I remember being up, feeling comfortable, feeling good. And I remember the countdown, 10, 9, 8. And I think there was a few breaks. I think the referee had to come in break. But to fast forward, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And I heard the 1, and everyone started cheering. But the fight was still going on. And I remember thinking, what's going on here? What's going on here? But I was still focused on the fight, still focused on the fight. Then, bang, he hit a kick, seemingly out of nowhere. Mm. And then the referee breaks up, and then it's over. So it was just such a strange feeling. And obviously, he got the win, and he knew what happened, and he immediately ran into the... it felt like he ran all the way to the Ivory Coast, but he ran into the Ivory Coast, the Ivorian contingency in the crowd. You know, those flags waving everywhere. And honestly,
and you knew he'd got you, didn't you?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I did know immediately. And I can... Let me tell you this, guys. In a packed stadium, an Olympic final, I believe there was 10,000, not a free seat in the house, not an empty seat in the house. That moment, I felt like the loneliest man in the world. I felt like I was completely alone in that arena, and that I was slowly sinking into the ring. A bit like when you see the old, you know, the comedy movies when they fall into quicksand. That's exactly what it felt like. I felt like I was slowly sinking down into the ring while I was watching Cisse celebrate because he's accomplished his life's goal. And that feeling of knowing that there's absolutely nothing I can do. And once again, after 4 years of struggle, 4 years of determination, hard work, doing what my coaches told me, listening to advice and doing what I had to do, that once again, I was going to have to wait for even another chance to get that gold medal. So the difference is last time, it didn't really hit me until I was on the podium. That one, it hit me straight away. And just the feeling of, just it was total devastation. Then obviously we all saw what happened 90 seconds later when I went to Nick Hope to do the BBC interview. So. Yeah, I can look back on it and honestly even still feel some of that same emotion that I felt then when I kind of go in and tap into that moment.
Was it any consolation, Lutella, that for many of us, the raw emotion and character that you demonstrated in that interview was so impressive in itself that, of course, you wanted the gold medal, but there were a lot of positives to take away from it?
Of course. I mean... I felt like, you know, I'd failed. I hadn't, accomplished my objective. That I'd let myself down. That I'd let my country down. That I'd let my team down. I mean, you got to understand, when you lose an Olympic final in the fashion that I lost, that's the emotions I felt anyway.
Sure.
And that's how I felt at the time, even if I don't feel like that now. So, at the time, it was much more difficult to see that. Because the interview, I wasn't doing it for that. I was just literally speaking from the heart. I mean, that was this raw, genuine emotion of how it felt to lose an Olympic final, how it felt to lose your life's goal or your life's ambition and have it snatched away with 1 second to go on the clock. But with perspective now, I can appreciate the reaction that I received from that interview. I remember speaking to my mum the next day, and she said, "Lutella, this is a little bit bigger than you might expect when you come home." And I just didn't know what to expect, because you got to understand, when you're at an Olympics, you're in a bubble. You're not focused on the media. Most of us, a few days before match day and a few days after, we switch off our phones, or we delete the Instagram or Twitter apps. We're just so focused on our objective. I had no idea what was going on back home, and the love and appreciation I received from the British public when I got home was so overwhelming, so magnanimous that I honestly don't know if I'd be where I am today if it hadn't been for that moment, still chasing that gold medal, because I feel like this time around, I'm not just doing it for myself. I'm doing it to, as you said, almost like complete the story, complete the chapter of what has been a roller coaster of a journey so far.
And that's the beautiful thing, that you have got another opportunity. There's a quote, Jonathan, you'll probably know this one as well. Doug Sanders back in 1970 at the Open Golf, and he had a putt, I think a 30-inch putt to beat Jack Nicklaus and win the Open, and inexplicably he missed it and went on to lose the playoff. And many years later, he was quoted as saying, "There are days when I go a full 5 minutes without thinking about that." and listen, wow. I don't want to put you in exactly the same situation here, but I imagine that moment, that last second, is constantly replaying in your mind. And the beautiful thing is that you will, God willing, have an opportunity to put that right next year.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, literally, when we get to that Olympic final next year and there's 1 second to go, you best believe I'm ducking. I am running out of the ring. I'm not taking any chance.
I haven't had a chance to come in with the key question here, mate, which, you know, I've been waiting 4 years to ask you. Why the hell didn't you run?
Because I'm not a coward. That's why I'm a warrior.
Good man. It's the right answer.
But no. I mean, it's very difficult to say. I mean, it's always easy with hindsight to say, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that. But at the moment, when you're in the moment, you do what you think is right. And I don't want to take anything away from Cisse. He did a magnificent job. He hit me with a wonderful kick, something that you'll probably never see again. And as much as we're talking about how devastating it was for me, I imagine the story in the Ivory Coast is what an amazing last second win it was for Cisse. So I don't want to detract from that. And it has to be said, I can look at this with a lot more perspective now, because that was actually the continent of Africa's first gold medal in the sport of taekwondo. I believe it was the Ivory Coast's first gold medal, period, at an Olympic Games. And to see the development of the sport all across the continent of Africa is absolutely wonderful. Now there's many African nations that are a serious force in this sport. And can I honestly say, if I had held on and won the gold, would I be able to help develop a sport on an entire continent? Probably not. So sometimes you have to look at it and see the greater picture and the greater plan. I'm speaking to you with confidence because I honestly believe that the gold medal is in my future. I believe that I will win next year. As a matter of fact, I believe I'll win it a few times after that. I'm really very confident about what I can do in this sport. This is now extra fuel to the fire. And I believe my experiences at these last two Olympics has given me something that can't really be replicated, which is the real, I'll be honest, the pain of losing at the highest level, of coming so close. That pain, I believe, is what's going to give me the edge, because next time around, I know what I'm going
to
do.
How long did it take you to get back on your feet? Did you want to retire at that initial stage? What was the healing process like?
You know what? In all honesty, guys, and people don't really believe this, the next morning, I was okay. I had that night to myself where I was upset and, you know, I'll be real with you guys. This is probably going to sound a bit silly, macho, but I was a little disappointed that I cried on TV. I was thinking, oh, man, everyone's going to think I'm soft, man. I'm supposed to be, a heavyweight fighting man, for crying out loud. Everyone's seen me cry. But so I was actually a bit more disappointed at that, really. I didn't want to look soft in front of everybody. I'm supposed to be a taekwondo master, man. This ain't supposed to be for me. But it happened how it happened. And the next day, the next morning, I was doing the interviews and I looked down at that shiny silver medal and thought, hey, okay, this is fine. I've got a bronze, I've got a silver. There's only one more color to go. And, thank God I'm still young enough where I have the youthfulness and the ability to go for more and more. So no, I wasn't too bad about it, to be honest, guys.
You can direct your own movie.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I would suggest everybody who hears this, remember, you're the star of your own movie, as you said. You're the star of your own story, and you have the power to take it into your own hands. And yes, it's not always going to go your way. There's going to be ups and downs, but we shouldn't shy away from our most painful moments in life because, I mean, I'm sure both of you will agree, it's been the really hard, painful moments that force you to make a change that has put you in the position you are today so you can be better, so you can improve, so you can be the best version of yourself. And honestly, losing the last second probably doesn't really get much more painful than that, maybe apart from being like knocked out like some of Mike Tyson's poor opponents back in the day. But, you know, I mean, it doesn't really get much worse. However, because of that emotion, because of that pain, I was forced now to look and say, hey, I really would prefer if that never happened again. So what can I do in my life and my career and my sport to improve and to make myself a better athlete and a better person? And I'm speaking to you, and I can honestly say I'm a better athlete and a better person than I was in 2016. Therefore, I know I'll be going into the 2020/2021 Olympic Games in Tokyo with an even better chance of delivering the gold medal for myself, for my nation, for my family. So I always try and extract the positive from each situation and improve from there.
Look, mate, you're an absolute treat to talk to. We've loved having this time with you. You know, it's been a brilliant chat, and I think so many people are going to get so much from it. You're an inspiring guy and a great ambassador, not just to Taekwondo, but Team GB in general.
Here.
And we'll see you in Tokyo.
Thank you so much.
With a gold medal round your neck.
On top of that podium, baby. And I can't wait for that post-fight interview.
You better have to now, mate.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And that's the only problem with talking yourself up.
Hey, Matt, that's all right, because I know I'm bringing the bling next year. And guess what? Gold happens to be my favourite colour. Well, thank you so much, guys. And honestly, I don't mind talking about this because revisiting those moments, it just allows me to extract the lessons out of it, and which keep me motivated and keep me going. So thank you very much for the interview. I really appreciate it.
All right. Have a good rest of the trip and stay safe.
Yes. Thank you. You too. Thank you so much, guys.
So there we go. Lotailo Mohammed from Walthamstow, East London, based in Manchester with the rest of the GB Taekwondo team. And he's off to Tokyo next year, as you can hear. Thoroughly determined to win the gold and nothing else. What a guy, Marcus.
Incredible guy. And I love that confidence. And he spoke about it being, you know, positive pressure. That's what he deals in. He's put himself up on a pedestal to some degree. But, you know, with that sort of fighting spirit and having dealt with what he's dealt with, I can't wait, Jonathan, for Tokyo 2021 and exactly what he does do.
We laughed about it a little bit. You know, he has set himself up for a fall, hasn't it? If it goes wrong, and things in that sport, like in boxing, can happen just like that, blink of an eye. But we'd rather that, wouldn't we? We'd rather someone go in with a little bit of gung-ho confidence.
I think so. I think actually that one of the downsides in our profession over the past few years has been how more and more athletes, so aware of their brand and the responsibilities and what might happen to them if they say the wrong thing, are just a little too defensive. They don't want to give too much away. So that's a breath of fresh air to hear a guy who clearly believes in himself. We know how good he is. He was a second away from winning the gold medal. So there's no reason for him not to think like that, and all power to him.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually, because, I mean, we all know that so many of the athletes we deal with, they pay for media coaching, don't they? And people we know deliver those services and do a really excellent job. But more often than not, the message is, oh, you know, don't say anything that can then come back to haunt you if something, you know, if your career takes a slightly different turn. So in other words, don't say you're going to win Wimbledon, because if you don't win Wimbledon, you'll look a fool. But Lotailo's point there is, well, kind of almost, who am I anyway? you know, I'm in a minority sport. So it's not like you're all going to be like laying it on me if I only win the silver again. And by creating this narrative, this story that is building over the course of his career, it's far more likely that we will eventually see that the Taylor Muhammad movie I was joking with him about than if he gave it the bland stuff.
Definitely. And I have to say, I've worked a lot in tennis. You have too. There are one or two players. Well, I have actually, I could show you if we were in front of a screen now. I've shown an interview where I wrote down what I knew I was going to get in terms of answers, the predictability. And okay, maybe you could blame me for asking dull questions, but at certain times there are only so many questions you can ask. And I just know what's coming. It's okay, that's fine. That's professional. I respect why you're doing it. But if we could have a few more Lutelos, just not putting themselves in a position where everyone's going to laugh at them if they don't succeed. But if you don't have that belief yourself in an individual sport like that, then really, you're probably in the wrong business.
And I tell you what, he's an absolute pro as well, isn't he? Because he carried on when this was happening in the background of the bar of his hotel in Croatia while we were chatting. Have a little listen.
As long as you keep faith and confidence that you're going to get to where you need to go in the end, that's okay. So
that's a complete tray of drinks has taken one there.
Was he waiting tables at the same time?
I think he could do anything if he put his mind to it. All right, Marcus, thank you very much. We will see you again all for Sport and the Bolt, which is our special edition coming up with loads of inside Usain stories.
Looking forward to
Sonia
it.
Sonia will join us for that one. In the meantime, subscribe if you haven't already and you'll get a new episode for every day of scheduled competition at the postponed Tokyo 2020 Games. And we'll see you next time on Sport and the Fields.
Sport and the Fields is a 94.19 independent production.
In association with Aldi UK, the official supermarket partner of Team GB.